Okay, so service-oriented architectures. The situations lead to SOA because they involve significant application integration efforts. So we discussed that, right? So different applications coming together, so the integration efforts increase, but then they have to be integrated in a proper way, and that is the driver for SOA. When an integrated application changes, it frequently leads to risky and costly modifications to other applications as well. So what it means is that suppose if one application changes, and we talked about the loosely coupled and the tightly coupled architecture, right? So if it is a tightly coupled architecture, then any other application or subsystems around it are also they're also prone to changes, right? So that's where SOA comes into picture. As system interconnections become more persuasive and the pace of business and the processes change, the ability to integrate efficiently can change the failure of a business. So again, it talks about the integration efforts. So SOA is seemingly ideal for such kind of situations. But not just these. In a broader framework, when we talk about rolling out a particular functionality, then always it has to be built on a proper, so we always say that it should be purpose built, right? So it should build on a proper methodology so that it can incorporate those changes, ensure that the loosely coupled architecture in place, right? So that the changes can be easily made. So this brings us to an important question. Why move the existing applications to SOA? So first, from the function oriented to a coordination oriented, build to last, rather than changing the entire approach to build to change. Prolonged development cycles to incrementally build and deploy it. So what does it mean? You have one after the other, the code going one after the other. The better approach is to build subsystems and then link them together, having the code to be reused, providing that modularity in the system and so on. Application silos to enterprise solutions which are integrated. Tightly coupled to loosely coupled. I think this is the favorite, right? For SOA, that's the baseline statement. Tightly coupled to a loosely coupled architecture. From an object oriented to a message oriented, and from non-implementation to abstraction. So as with all IT implementation, SOA implementation too requires the support of various key stakeholders in your organization. So you should have an endorsement from your SLT, that is a senior leadership team, have a go ahead from the business drivers and the different cross-functional teams as well. However, the buy-in and involvement of the following additional stakeholders is required. One is the service usage regulators, so they are the key, the developers of the service users, and the external developers of the service providers. So let us understand a few components in the service-oriented architecture. So let us start with service discovery. We briefly spoke about those in the previous slides, but now let us understand them in more detail. So service discovery is the mechanism by which the service consumers, so service consumers are the end users, become aware of the available services and their capabilities. Right? So how should, and this service consumers could be other services or it could be the end users. So how could they be made aware about the services and their capabilities? So service discovery starts with a one-time operations in which the service provider publishes its service in some form of a registry. Yeah, so here it's the answer. So there is some or the other registry where this information has to be stored about service, its description and its capability. The form of registry can change from a simple web page to a robust implementation with advanced query capabilities. The service registry is then queried at a design time by developers of service consumers for the service with the desired capability. So assuming that I'm a service owner, right, and I have to say address or probably use another service. Now how do I get that information? It from that registry. So if that information is present in the registry, it becomes easy for me to get it. Next is the service composition. The service composition is a mechanism by which services are combined to fulfill a business or a operational process. Service compositions can be done fully within the service consumer but there is also a considerable support for service composition within the SOI infrastructure, specifically in business process modeling infrastructure components. So typically the BPM components enable a service consumer developer to graphically compose service into a registry and then generate the appropriate code for this orchestration. So what it says is that a complex service can be broken down into individual service, and the entire process of business process modeling, it can take a cue from the service registry about the different subsystems that you've created. Third is the service endpoint. So service endpoint is a URL where the service can be accessed by a client application. So it's self-explanatory. The same web service can have multiple endpoints. So endpoint is, I would say, the end interface as such. So how the service can be accessed by the client or the application. So that's the endpoint. So it's a touch point for the external world. The endpoint provide information needed to address a web service endpoint. The endpoint provides a reference or specification that is used to define a group or family of message addressing properties and give end-to-end message characteristics such as a reference from the source and the destination of the endpoints. Next is the service invocation. So what does a service invocation mean? So service invocation is the mechanism by which services are invoked by the service consumers. So how the service has to be consumed, by which method can I actually access that service is the service invocation. So there are two basic patterns. So one is a point-to-point and one is a mediated. Now point-to-point is a method, and it's most common. So point-to-point is where a consumer can directly invoke a service over a network. So one point is the consumer and one point is the service. So it's a direct point-to-point relation. Whereas in case of a mediated, we'll see it in the next slide. So point-to-point is the most acceptable environment that are small in terms of services and consumers. So if it's a small environment, then a point-to-point is suited. But then if it's a large environment, then you need something called as a middleware, so that the end consumers can access the middleware and the middleware can access the services. So in a mediated pattern, the service consumers invoke services via a middleware component such as an enterprise service bus. So enterprise service bus is basically a middleware component. So on one side, you have the service consumers. On the other side, there are the different services. So probably they would use the middleware or the middle layer to access the end services. And this gives a lot of modularity. So suppose if there are only two consumers and there's only one service, then you can have a direct point-to-point relation. But then in a broader framework, in a larger application, there has to be a proper middleware, and that is the crux of every SOA and middleware based architecture. Web services. So web services is any piece of software that uses standard web interfaces to communicate with other software containing web service interface. The distinguishing features is use of common interface. So web services are, as it is mentioned, it is the front end which can be used to access the other services. So the common example, web app DB. So web service is the front end where probably the users might see a web page. So that's a web service. It is a standardization of interfaces that enables web services to talk to each other and provide a framework for all people anywhere to communicate with each other through web services. While web services is just a technology pattern for implementing service-oriented systems, it is often confused or equated to SOA as it is the most common technology pattern. So web services is one of the services, but then it's not what SOA is all about, right? So web service, they do provide a kind of decoupling or the loose coupling that we spoke about in terms of the web accessing the app and app accessing the DB. But then it's not just the SOA. So it shouldn't be confused with SOA. Web services. Following are the web service standard, which is purely to just get familiarity with the name. So for transport it is HTTP, HTTPS. So whenever you access a secure site, say when you want to access any of the banking applications, you type HTTPS, I mean, say for example, you say type icicibank.com, automatically the Google will get you a URL saying that it is https://icicibank.com/blah blah 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 blah. And why HTTPS? Because HTTPS is a secure web service. It encrypts the data, whereas HTTP is plain text. Then encoding is XML. Then there are methods through which these services can be invoked. So those are SOAP based or RESTful APIs. So probably we should not get into details about those, but then these things are mentioned so as to get familiarity with those terms. So then probably you could look at certain orchestration technologies such as BPSS, WSCL, right? So these are yet to be stabilized. Okay, we spoke about the middleware or the middle layer where the consumers can use to talk to the service components. So let us understand what is an enterprise service bus. So enterprise service bus is a middleware product that connects and mediates all the communication and interactions between service consumers and services, and it is based on standards. We spoke about them. A detailed a technical definition of ESB is an ESB is a middleware solution that enables interoperability between heterogeneous environments using a service oriented model, and it represents the consolidation of the EAI and applications over several server product categories. So in a SOA framework, this broking service is usually called as the ESB. So basically, as I said, it's just a middleware through which the consumers can talk to the end services, and it is the ESB is strictly not required to implement a service oriented system. It is useful in large heterogeneous service oriented environments because it reduces the complexity. So as we mentioned, right, so if it's a small system where probably there are a few consumers and very less services, then you don't need a middleware in between. But a middleware for a large enterprise is required so that it brings more modularity. So benefits of SOA: it supports non-intrusive reuse of software components in ways not specially predicted as development time, loose coupling amongst interacting software agents, a mechanism for interacting software components on dissimilar patterns, can enable easier insourced, outsourced development by breaking systems down into smaller chunks. We said each subsystem has to be broken down. So SOA reference architecture. SOA facilitates the creation of flexible, reusable assets for enabling end-to-end business solutions. There are considerable benefits that SOA brings to business, such as cost reduction, agility, increasing the time and providing the competitive advantage, consolidation and alignment, right? So the biggest is the agility and the consolidation and the alignment. So we saw in the case of mergers how SOA reference architecture could help both the organization getting onto a common application goal, or and we saw the need for the systems to be agile to say bring in or develop new subsystems to get integrated with the existing application suite, right? So the SOA reference architecture is to be used as a blueprint, or as a reference architecture as it is said, and include the templates and guidelines for enterprise and solution architects, as well as the engineering roles and the and throughout the software development lifecycle. So as I said, whenever an application is developed, a reference architecture has to be kept in mind, the proper blueprints have to be kept in mind, so that at each and every stage of your application development, these principles can be used as guiding forces so that you don't go wrong. Okay, let us talk about governance. So we spoke about SOA, its benefits. Let us talk about governance. So like all governance models, governance with SOA should be about delivering the objects, objectives that a business commands, and how SOA is able to deliver those values. So it must link SOA investment to the business goals and initiatives that mitigate the risks associated with SOA and fit into the context of the well-architected framework using the IT governance methodologies. So in case of SOA adoption, the SOA governance can be defined as the interaction between policies, decision makers and processes in order to achieve a higher success rate. So the MIT definition of IT governance, it states as below. So specifying the decisions, rights and accountability framework to encourage the desired behavior in the use of IT. So the next slide, this talks about the SOA governance framework. So governance framework, we said how the systems are architected, what are the policies that are designed, what are the different processes, and then who are the actual users and who get benefited. So all these encompasses the SOA governance. So the SOA governance, it addresses three issues: what decisions must be taken for effective management, who should make those decisions and who has the input rights, and lastly how the decision should be implemented. So it's a part of the governance framework. So typically I've just taken this example to enable you to see how SOA can actually help in case of a live environment. So here what you see on the left is the architecture before the SOA was implemented. So you have the order processing and the other units on your left, and how each of the subsystems are designed, which access the information below. So the data repository is mentioned below, which consists of say the sales, the CRM, the marketing and the other stuff. And the above subsystems include the order processing, the different stakeholders alignment and so on. So if you see on your left, these systems are very tightly coupled in nature. So one after the other, there is very high dependency on each other. Whereas on the right, what you see is that the major subsystems have been broken down into smaller chunks, right? And then it also gives a scope to have newer business processes in place. And then each service then has certain reusable business components, which you see on your right. So there are the below services. So each of the service has been broken down so that each service can be reused by the individual functions. So say if it's a order processing, then it can use a particular function, and also the service orchestration, probably even that can use, and the data repository remains common. So here you see SOA in action. So it's a very high level view, as I said, again a 30,000 feet view. But then the point that I'm trying to drive through this, and probably this gives you a little more insight as to how a SOA reference architecture can bring a change in the way the business is processed. So if I have certain subsystems who have to process certain things, then having too much dependence on one subsystem, and if that system fails, it's not a good point in my entire architectural design. So as compared to that, a reference architecture, a SOA architectural framework in place gives more modularity to my entire design. Okay, so let us now understand middleware. Having understood what SOA is all about, how applications should be architected, let us now understand middleware. So middleware is a system that acts as the software glue that helps programs and databases running on different computers to work together. It is a software infrastructure that provides core services such as concurrency of transactions, multi-threading of applications, messaging, and the security aspects. So middleware is essential to SOA concept and the prime mover behind high availability applications. So middleware, as I said, is a middle layer, and make no mistake, so wherever you see a SOA, SOA is not complete without a middleware. So SOA and middleware go hand in hand, right? Because it's a package. It's a complete framework altogether. So SOA talks about a reference architecture, and middleware is an important part of the SOA framework. So SOA and middleware will be used together. Middleware includes web services, web servers, application servers, content management systems and similar tools that support application development and delivery and integration to the different systems based on XML or SOAP based or web services or LDAP. So they are essential in logical distribution of the environment when programs or database running on the same computers in a physically different distributed environment. So as I said, as in when the number of units, the number of processing units increases, a middleware should be there so that it gives more flexibility to the design, more modularity to the design, reusability. We saw the example of the SOA reference architecture in the real world, how the different services were accessed. So middlewares adds that flexibility in the entire design. So as I said, middleware has emerged as a critical level of the enterprise IT infrastructure. The need for middleware stems from growth in the number of applications, in the customization within those applications, and in the number of locations in the environment. Let us understand the type of middleware. So first is the basic middleware is the one that operates within a single domain or a single application system or a set of interrelated applications or systems where all the components have been deployed under a common guideline and a single architecture. So it talks about a single domain or a single application. So that's the basic middleware. Then we talk about application middleware. So this includes the middleware that fits into the specific types of applications. So such as say web-based applications or the desktop applications. So then there are certain middlewares which are designed to cater to those web-based applications or say data access applications or the desktop applications, right? So suppose if you have something like a desktop virtualization or a VDI, virtualized desktop environment, then the middleware in a virtualized desktop environment is different from a web service environment. Then is a communication middleware. So is a computer software that enables two separate software components, processes or applications to reliably exchange information. So this is more from exchanging the communication protocols, providing that message bus. So that's what the communication middleware is all about. So enables two separate components to reliably exchange information and messages between application systems and the partners. Then there are the web-based services and the web services, which are important as far as the communication middleware is concerned. Integration middleware, so it provides a connection between independently developed application system that might be running on the same hardware and using the same software technology. So imagine if hardware and software, so if it's a homogeneous system, if it's a monolithic application, right? So then in this case, integration middleware is something that comes into picture. Integration middleware offers features that help reconcile the technical and application design differences that inevitably occur in a heterogeneous environment. Then we can talk about adapters. So adapters are a combination of design tools and runtime softwares that act as glue to link the different applications which are considered sources or targets to other applications or other integration middleware. Okay, now having had a fair idea about what a middleware is, we can now touch upon the last topic for this particular session, which is the workflow systems. Now we saw the SOA, we saw the middleware, right? Now let us understand how workflow systems help the actual flow of documents in a real life scenario. So workflow can be described simply as the movement of documents and tasks through a business process, as we just mentioned. Workflow can be a sequential progression of work or a complex set of procedures that take place concurrently and eventually impacting each other with a set of rules. So what does this mean? So either I have a sequential workload, so say if there is a file, right? Consider the example of a bank. So if I have to open up an account, then I submit certain documents, then one person approves it, then the second person approves it, the third process checks the background verification, the fourth process checks my CIBIL score, the fifth process checks my background verification, and so on. So that's a sequential flow. There could also be some complex systems in place. So say for example, there is a passport application, right? So passport application, there would be one subsystem which would do a background verification. There would be one subsystem who would do the police verification. There would be one subsystem to check if I have had any kind of criminal records. There could be one subsystem who could check if I've already had a duplicate passport. And then all these subsystems could be linked together. And then the workflow systems basically have to be designed so that at each level, how the document flows within that system. So that's an example of a complex system. Workflow management is the automation of a business process in whole part during which the documents, information or tasks are passed from one participant to another for actions, activities according to a set of rules. So as we mentioned, in a sequential workflow, after first process is done, the second one picks it up. Whereas in case of a complex process, things could happen parallelly and there could be different authorizations at different points. But these are again based on a set of rules. The ultimate goal is to manage the flow of work such that the work gets done at the right time and by the right person. So the authorization is done at the right time and the person authorizes the right kind of work. Workflow management systems are software packages that can be used to support the definition, the management and execution of workflow processes. So the typical features associated with many workflow management systems, they include the process definition tool. So you actually have to define the different processes. Again, the banking example, the first process talks about, say, opening of the savings account. The second process talks about background verification. The third process talks about the credit score, right? So the process definition is the first. Simulation, prototyping and piloting, task initialization and control, rule-based decision making. Now that's the key for any kind of a process, right? So you have to have a set of rules that should govern the entire workflow, and more so for a complex workflow, because in case of a simple it's sequential, but complex you could have say authorizations at different levels. So a rule-based decision making is absolutely critical in case of a workflow system. Then document routing, how each document has to flow within the system, and the work lists. Next, include the task automation. So how the task has to be automated, say from start to the end. Then there could be something called as event notification. So again, let us take an example of the passport system. So when the passport gets processed, the end user gets notification, say for example, your passport approval is done. Then once the approval is done, it goes to the police verification. So you might get one more SMS saying that your police verification is done. And when it is shipped, you get one more notification. So the event notification is again a part of the workflow, and it has to be used for the betterment of the end user. There is process monitoring. Obviously, it has to be monitored. The tracking and logging of activities, again, it is related to monitoring and the process flow. Administration and security. And the last is access to the information. So as I said, security plays a key part in the entire workflow. So how secure is the information flow? Do we want to flow? Does the information have to flow through an encrypted medium? Or should there be certain algorithms in place which would help encryption and decryption at the different touch points? So these are very critical when we talk about workflow systems. So let us understand the benefits of workflow management systems. So they are complex, yet simple processes can be automatically coordinated. Avoidance of errors and missed deadlines. Accurate dispatches and billing. So if you have a proper process, if you have proper authorization, then dispatches, billing can be easily handled. Task ownership is defined and fixed. So it's very simple, right? So say for example, if there is a simple claim processing application, right? And this is very common across all industries. The moment you submit a conveyance claim, it first gets approved by the manager, then it gets approved by the manager's manager, I mean depending upon how the workflow is designed. So at everywhere the task is defined, and suppose if your manager is not does not approve it, then there is an event notification that goes to the manager saying that you say the task is pending under your bucket. Plus, ownership is defined, and a notification is sent to the user, or probably user can check it on the portal saying that where is the document stuck or where is the approval stuck. So at each step there is a task ownership defined, and then there is an improved cycle time. Obviously, if the things are flowing in a methodical way, the time to process the entire document is reduced. Then there is automated archiving of all the processes. It could be done. Increased transparency, again giving that example of the conveyance application, it transparently displays information saying that it is pending with the manager, or it is pending with the finance department, or say your claim has been approved and given for dispersal, right? So it brings in more transparency. It reduces the communication costs. So you no longer have to call someone and tell them, okay, please do that approval. Improved management, independent from employee absence. So even in case of, say, if the approving authority is absent, then that particular employee can delegate the authority to someone else, or the systems can be designed in an intelligent way that if one approver is missing, then probably it goes to the next approver, so that you know, the delegation of authority takes place. And last is the increased flexibility. We all understand how it brings about flexibility in the entire workflow. So now that we've seen the SOA and the middleware and the workflow, let us look at some of the products that exist in the market. So for SOA and middleware, the leaders in the market space are IBM, SAP, Oracle, Microsoft with TIBCO, Software AG, MuleSoft. So these are some of the clear leaders. While IBM, SAP, Oracle and Microsoft are enterprises, so they are they act as the tier one solutions. So TIBCO has been one of the oldest specialists, and others like, say, Software AG, MuleSoft, Axway, they're also trying to catch up in this particular space. So guys, what we studied in this particular lecture is we understood how an application is built, how it has to be designed for fit for purpose use, how it has to be agile in the entire product life cycle. Then we discussed about the SOA, that is the service oriented architecture, how it helps in the overall product journey, how it helps for applications to be more agile. We then understood what a middleware is, how a middleware is implemented in case of a smaller subsystem or a smaller application where you have a point to point versus a larger application where you have the middleware in between, so that the service consumers can talk to the services through a middleware which does the encapsulation, provides the flexibility and things like that. And lastly, we also saw how workflows are designed, or how workflows help to minimize the people dependency, and how it brings about automation to the entire flow of a document in the organization. So I hope this has been informative to you, and I'd like to thank you for viewing.